You are listening to Redbox Media. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation at 573-4-RED-4 or connect with us at redboxmedia.com and social media. Come care to share with us. Redbox Media.
This is Setting the Record Straight. On BreadboxMedia.com. Join me now to reflect upon the magnificent history of our beloved Catholic Church. We're going to be considering today one of my favorite subjects, a real-life Camelot that really existed. You ever wondered what society was the first 100% literate society, where everyone could read and write? Would it surprise you to know that the population of this civilization was Guarani Indians, the Indios Guarani, who live in an area roughly coinciding with present-day Paraguay, Uruguay, part of Argentina, and the southern part of Brazil. The first beginning of this civilization was a settlement that was founded in 1609. It was a mission, a Jesuit mission. They were called reductions or reducciones. In the 21st century, in the so-called advanced world, the civilized world, it's become somewhat okay, politically correct, to criticize missions, especially Catholic missions, and to slander them and repeat the slanders. When one examines the historical record, one finds little reason for that. There are exceptions. The Jesuit reductions were one of the most singular and beautiful creations of Catholic missionary activity. They have contributed more than any other factor to fix the name of Paraguay in history. These missions have been the object of the most sincere admiration and bitter criticism from opponents of the Catholic Church. These Guarani Indians, who only a few generations prior had been primitives living in the jungle, hunting and gathering. Under the kind Jesuits, these Guarani Indians lived in towns and villages, which they had built themselves, whose beautiful Spanish architecture would rival and surpass many Spanish towns in Europe. Indeed, they were more advanced in culture than many areas of Europe. They had orchestras, musical ensembles, actors' troupes, and all the profits derived from Indian labor and the communal fields were distributed to the laborers. And this earned praise from some of the leading lights of the French Enlightenment, a contemporary movement in Europe. Enlightenment figures were not predisposed to favor Jesuits or the Catholic Church at all. Yet, one of their philosophers, D'Alembert, said that by means of religion, established a monarchical authority in Paraguay, founded solely on their powers of persuasion and on their lenient methods of government. Masters of their countries, they rendered happy the people under their sway. They succeeded in subduing them without ever having recourse to force. And even Voltaire, that old enemy of the Catholic Church, called the Jesuit government a triumph of humanity. What's the truth of the situation? Well, it's quite an appealing truth. An exact account, based on the best sources, is the best justification for these highly successful colonies. They lasted 150 years and were destroyed by military invasion by the Paulistas from São Paulo, Brazil. If you've ever seen the movie The Mission with Robert De Niro, Liam Neeson, Jeremy Irons, Aidan Quinn, quite a group of stars, it won an Oscar for Best Cinematography and a Palme d'Or, the Golden Palm Award. I believe you'd be deeply moved by the film. The award-winning score was by Ennio Morricone. It's a beautiful musical score. Let's add a bit of it in here. There's a scene in the movie The Mission where Jeremy Irons, playing one of the first Jesuits to go into these primitive areas, appears in the forest and takes out his oboe and puts it together and begins to play a lovely theme and draws the Guarani Indians out from their hiding places in the jungle. And they come cautiously up to him, sniffing and expecting him, and his instrument. They are awed.
And then in a very touching gesture, take him by the hand and lead him off to their village. It came out in the 80s. It's one of the finest films of a year, of many fine films. It depicted in miniature what these Reduciones were. It showed Jeremy Irons as a Jesuit priest protecting his village of Guarani Indians from the attack of the Paulistas, or Mamelucas, as they were called, who are essentially Portuguese slavers. The movie is wonderful, but it is an exaggeration tending to miniaturize a culture which featured a major achievement of architecture, art, literacy, charity. Altogether, a successful society, a successful communal society, by the way, run by the Jesuit missionaries. I guess you have to understand the colonial political conditions as existed in the Spanish La Plata area in southern Brazil, around and south of there, at the time of the arrival of the Jesuits. The country was discovered in 1515 by Juan Diaz de Solis and had gradually, by slow stages, been conquered in disastrous battles with the warlike, liberty-loving natives. The missionary Jesuits arrived in Paraguay in 1588. By then, the Spaniards had founded 10 cities and 40 colonies. The natives were subdued by force of arms or submitted voluntarily in some cases, but they were brought under the yoke of the Spanish encomienda system, which in its more severe application made them virtual slaves, or in its milder form, more like serfs to the conquistadores and the white colonists. The Spanish kings sought to better the lot of the natives by wise and humane decrees for their protection, but they had great difficulties in exercising control over them, and the weakness or selfishness of many of the officials permitted the abuse of the system. There were frequent uprisings. The churches and parishes that had been founded in the forests in the interior were frequently laid to waste by these frequent revolutions. It was not until the reductions were founded that conditions were improved. Now, what were the reductions? Reduciones? They were virtually Spanish colonial towns of rather beautiful Spanish colonial architecture. Now, the kings of Spain did have the conversion of the native peoples sincerely at heart. They felt a deep need to enact the grand commission of Jesus Christ to convert all nations and bring them to him, to the way. So missionaries were sent to accompany even the earliest expeditions to the area. Here, as elsewhere, the first pioneers of the faith were Franciscans. Beside them were also Dominicans. The immense territory was divided into three dioceses: Paraguay, Tecuman, and Buenos Aires. The first bishop that was appointed, Don Francisco de Vitoria, arrived to take charge of his diocese in 1581, and he found he had only 5 secular and a few regular priests, not one who could speak the language of the Indians. What happened then? Well, 5 years later, the first Jesuits came to aid the bishop at the bishop's request. They also arrived at Paraguay. A praiseworthy characteristic and famous one of the Jesuits is that they often learned the native languages of the people that they're missionizing before they even attempt to missionize them. They learn their local customs. They learn how they think before they attempt to evangelize. The Jesuits had become famous in Europe because of the achievements of Francis Xavier in Eastern India. It was hoped the Society of Jesus would prove a great aid as well as toward improving the religious conditions in general and converting the numerous wild tribes. So colleges, seminaries, residences, and houses for spiritual retreats were found in rapid succession. The missionaries went out among the tribes who were still at liberty and covered the vast territory in all directions, very much as St. Francis Solanus did about the same period. These missionary excursions reflected honor upon the heroism of the missionaries. They achieved no lasting result. So soon, the general of the order, Aquaviva, insisted on the concentration of effort and the founding of similar efforts in Brazil. I want to set the record straight on something. Some historians have mistakenly thought the Jesuits had a longing for power, and the communal nature of these concentrations of people owed their origin to a previously outlined idea of a state that had been imposed by the Spanish government. On the contrary, they grew in the most natural manner out of the efforts to eliminate three principal difficulties in the way of the conversion of the Indians had been carried on before. These were oppression of the natives by force, which resulted in aversion to the Catholic religion, and the bad example of the colonists' behavior. The Jesuits' method was to ensure maximum liberty for the Indians, emancipation from the serf or slave state, and winning over the aboriginal people by spiritual conquest in separate mission colonies or reductions managed independently by the missionaries. The existing secular colonists didn't like the Jesuits' idea, and this led frequently to Jesuits being expelled from various local areas. There was really a storm of animosity against the Jesuits. But the Jesuits had a powerful ally in Philip III of Spain, who energetically supported them and the cause of the oppressed Indians, who not only sanctioned the plan of the Jesuits, but furthered them very effectively with a number of royal decrees and even appropriations from the public treasury. And he placed them on a firm legal basis. Philip commanded the governor that even if he could conquer the Indians on the Paraná River by force of arms, he must not do so. He must gain them over solely through the sermons and instructions of the religious who had been sent for that purpose. Let's listen to a little bit more of the score of the mission as we pause for a break.
You are listening to Redbox Media. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation at 573-4-BREAD-4 or connect with us at redboxmedia.com and social media. Come care to share with us. Redbox Media.
This is redboxmedia.com. Yes, this is Chuck Coughlin back with you again on Setting the Record Straight. Uncovering the record about the wonderful Guarani missions, the Reducciones. We're hearing more music from the movie The Mission that depicted this. The Jesuits had a great success with a rather bold experiment in religious colonizations. They were one of those singular creations of the Catholic missionary effort. The missionary Jesuits had originally arrived in the area that is now Paraguay in 1588. Philip III, King of Spain, had proclaimed that only the sword of the word, as he called it, should be used to subdue Paraguayan Indians. Well, the Jesuits had definite ideas about what an ideal society would be like. Would it surprise you to hear that St. Thomas More, who was beheaded for his faithful Catholicism by Henry VIII, inspired them with his description of an ideal society in his book Utopia, 1516. The fundamental idea of More's Utopia was to restore society to its Christian basis, adopting as supreme guide the norms of natural rights. The Jesuits saw themselves as fulfilling Thomas More's prophecy, and to carry out this work, they chose the impenetrable jungles of the New World as their home and workshop. Here they felt they could do their work undisturbed, armed with a self-government grant from the king, which protected them from other Spaniards. Land was granted to the Jesuit priests as well as to the other religious orders. What mattered, really, was not so much the land itself, but rather the number of Indians, or souls, that lived on it. The Jesuits formed a link between the Baroque Age and the pre-revolutionary period. By the time you got up into the 1600s, the Jesuits were the foremost cultural organization and one of the strongest economic and political forces in the entire colonial world of the Americas. Before we go further, let's say a little more about the Jesuits and then a little bit more about the Guarani Indians, whom they evangelized. The Jesuits were certainly international in character and brought clergymen into South America from many foreign nations. These foreign priests brought new currents of thought, for instance, from the Netherlands and Germany, into the Spanish Jesuit communities. Of course, they were students of geography, natural history, in the areas that they worked. They kept exact records of the native cultures. They did this in North America. There's a 72-volume series called The Jesuit Relations, describing fine details about life of the natives of North America. They learned the Guarani language. Indeed, their homilies were in the Guarani language. They taught the Guarani language in their schools. Under their instruction, it became a written language. By the 1700s, the intellectual standards, economic power, and social influence of the Jesuits was unmatched. Their economic power derived from enormous plantations in the Central Valley of Chile, ranches in the River Plata region, and large city and rural estates in Peru and in Mexico. There were Jesuit-owned workshops in Paraguay, Peru, and Colombia, Ecuador, Venezuela, and Panama. These vast holdings comprise the material aspect of what has been recognized as the largest utopian experiment ever attempted. And it was a success. The Jesuits established this utopian empire under very adverse conditions. The first step was just to get along with the Indians, to be at peace with them, to gain their trust. Father de Santa Cruz and del Castillo were martyred in 1628 and beatified by Pope Pius XI. Even after these aborigines, who were cannibals to start with, accepted the missionaries and became somewhat more peaceful, they were often attacked by groups who were searching for slaves. In spite of these hardships, the Jesuit fathers set up model communities of indigenous people in the wilderness, reflecting the Jesuit sense of self-discipline and of organization. You might wonder why I refer to them as the reductions, the reducciones. That term derives from the Latin word, which means to lead back. The Jesuits were convinced that the Guarani people of Paraguay had once known the true faith, but had been led astray by Satan. Their great mission then was to lead back to the Catholic Church, to Catholicism. This feeling derived from observed surface similarities in Guarani and Christian symbols and practices. Let's talk for a moment about the Guarani Indians. What were they like before the arrival of the Jesuits? They didn't call themselves Guarani. They called themselves Aba, that is, men. They belonged to a very large group, the Tupi Guarani stock, which inhabited a great area from the Paranaíba River to the Amazon. That includes most of eastern Brazil and extends as far west as the slopes of the Andes. They were rather short. The men were a little over 5 feet tall, and their skin was rather light in color. They were very stoutly built. When the Europeans arrived, they found a rather quiet group. They had no music at all. They didn't seem to sing, which is remarkable, given how beautifully they sang later. They were sedentary, agricultural. The greater part of their diets was manioc and wild honey, which was made into a sort of tapioca. The tapioca was made with corn, game, and wild honey. And they lived in palisaded villages of communal houses, 10 to 15 families living together. They had always been talented potters and woodcarvers and were quite artistic. They used bows and arrows and blowguns as weapons. The men wore labrets on the lower lip and feather crowns and a G-string. The women wore woven garments covering the whole body. Polygamy was rare, but it did happen occasionally. Their religion, of course, was the animistic pantheism that is usual among the aborigines of North and South America. They had no central government, the communities being united only by a bond of common interest and language. There were dialects of Guarani, and those that spoke these tended to form into tribal groups. Before the Europeans arrived, there were probably about 400,000 of them. So this was the culture that the Catholic missionaries encountered. The Indians often accepted conversion, sometimes by the thousands, but they tended to lapse back into their practices, especially polygamy and cannibalism. The Jesuits were only partly successful in eliminating both of these outside the mission, for both were deeply rooted in the native culture. For this reason, only converted Indians were allowed inside the missions. The Jesuits felt that segregation was the only way to ensure that the converted Indians would not be tempted by the pagan practices of the uninitiated. The Jesuits also wanted to isolate their communities from the Spanish and Portuguese colonies. As long as the crown sponsored them, the Jesuits avoided interference from the local Spanish authorities. But protecting the Indians from the encroachment of white settlers was another matter. These laymen viewed the pacified Indians as a slave labor pool for their own use, and consequently destroyed communities of converts. The Jesuits called the police to Mamelukes because their atrocities reminded them of those committed by the Mohammedans. So these conflicts between the Spanish and Portuguese settlers and the Reducciones colonies escalated into wars. Philip II granted the Jesuits' request to arm the Indians, and the Jesuits took command. They were the generals. The natives became a formidable fighting force. In the wars between Portugal and Spain, it was these Indian forces that were often the determining factor in Spanish victories. Historians say that Uruguay, Bolivia, and Paraguay would now belong to Brazil if it was not for these expert armies of the Reducciones, under the capable leadership of these Jesuits. Each of the Reducciones was under the rule of two priests who were responsible for discipline, development, and welfare. The Reducciones were divided into the fields of God and the fields of man. On the fields of God, all members of the community labored together to produce the harvests. The fields of man, however, were parceled out for individual use by the Indians. They virtually owned them. The crops produced in the field of God were owned by the whole commune, whereas the crops gathered in the fields of man were kept by the individual farmers. Now, as soon as these colonies became prosperous, and that was not long, they imported pots and pans, needles, clothing, and other necessities. There was a Guarani government. Under these two Jesuits, the government of the reduction was carried out by elected representatives. It was a limited democracy. Now, you and I might think, looking back on this, that this would stir admiration of the surrounding Spaniards and Portuguese. The haciendas in the area tended to be rather poorly managed. They employed slave labor, of course. They just couldn't compete with the Reducciones. The Reducciones were perceived as political and economic threats and eventually were outlawed, and the Jesuits were forced to leave some areas. But why don't we talk about a happier subject, a joyous subject, the form of their religious rituals? During this period of history, the theater was an integral part of European religious festivals. Everywhere in the Catholic world, there were mystery plays or miracle plays, actually as part of the Mass. Gospels were often acted out by actors in costume. So the Jesuits also used this theatrical practice, which had already been developed by the Franciscans and Dominicans. The practice was used to attract and amuse the Indians. It also made explicitly clear the content of the Gospels. Dances of Indian and African origin were blended into the mysteries of the new religion. The purely African communities instantly accepted the school of the Jesuit theater and learned from it. These Africans, of course, had been imported there as slaves, and some had found protection and freedom under the Jesuits. A bit more of the soundtrack of the mission. I'll see you after the break.
You are listening to Redbox Media. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation at 573-4-BREAD-4 or connect with us at redboxmedia.com and social media. Come care to share with us. Redbox Media.
Back after the break, Chuck Coughlin here on Setting the Record Straight. I'm trying to correct some of the misimpressions that have been propagated by enemies of the Catholic Church about the glorious missions of the Jesuits, the Reducciones of South America. In this segment, I'm going to set the record straight about several of these misimpressions. But I want to say a word about Real Life Radio also. You see, Real Life Radio is supported by you, the listeners. We really value your support. And when you support Real Life Radio as a Care to Share member, you have the potential of getting way more than you could ever give. You know, it's pretty unusual. Take a look at Care to Share. Go to our website, realliferadio.com, and click on Care to Share. Take a look at that program, Care to Share. And if you want to, do something about it. You'll be glad you helped us, and you'll be amazed at the benefits. Now let's talk about the Jesuits and the Reducciones again. The Jesuits used the wealth that was accumulated by their colonies. They invested it in the colonies themselves, buying land, tools, draft animals. They gave the Indians plentiful scientific and technical advice. Of course, the Indians had a voice in decision-making. The Jesuits used their wealth to direct and control seminaries and missions of great importance to the economic life of the colonies. They provided intellectual centers in small provincial towns, banking facilities, and forums for the resolution of local political problems. So that tells you a little bit about the Jesuits and reveals something of the character of these amazing men. The first settlement was founded in 1609, very early. Many other missions were established, usually along the rivers, including the Chico, Guaita, and Paraná rivers. But due to the continuous raids of the Paulistas, those are slavers from São Paulo, Brazil, these were soon abandoned by the 1640s. They retreated further away from São Paulo, and they prospered once again. Guided by the Jesuits, the Indios had advanced laws. They founded free public services for the poor, hospitals and care for the elderly and the widows, and suppressed the death penalty. The Reducciones were the first so-called industrial state of South America. They produced such advanced products as watches, musical instruments, technologically advanced products of the time, which they exported to Europe. They built a printing press. It was the first typography in the New World. The working day was only about 6 hours long. In Europe at the time, it was 12 to 14 hours. There was a lot of free time. It was dedicated to music, dance, bowshot contests, to prayer, and to a lot of conversation. The main settlements had been along the border of present-day Argentina and Paraguay. These missions assumed almost full independence, as if they were real nations. Virtually all the profits derived from the Indios' labor were distributed to the laborers. In this way, the Jesuits earned praise from some of the leading lights of the French Enlightenment, who were not predisposed to favor Jesuits. Unfortunately, the trouble started in the 1750s, about 150 years after the establishment of the first colony, when the King of Spain ceded to Portugal a portion of the very territory where the missions were located. The Portuguese wanted to take economic advantage of these zones and of the work of the Indios, which was somewhat famous. Their attempt to assume control of the profits caused the so-called Guarani Wars, which concluded in 1756, 6 years later, with the Indios' defeat. 11 years later, the Jesuits were expelled from the country, and the missions collapsed. The Reducciones economy has collapsed. The people were impoverished.
The last missions were gradually emptied.
Indios returned to the forest. Today, all that is left are these beautiful Spanish colonial ruins of some of the Reducciones. And, of course, the indigenous language, the Guarani, and it is today the only native language to be an official language of a South American nation, Paraguay. The Indios Guarani almost disappeared as they are now
reduced today to 50,000 people.
Remember, it was 300,000 under the Jesuits' care. I mentioned earlier how the rug was pulled out from under these successful missions. It was done by the Spanish King Charles III in a move to gain control of the Reducciones' wealth, which was accumulating and considerable. Charles III expelled the Jesuits, 1767. Within a few decades of the expulsion, most of what the Jesuits had accomplished was lost. Without the Jesuits' enlightened management, the missions lost their valuables, lost their economy, became disorganized, and were slowly abandoned by the Guarani Indios. Many of these people were captured by the slave-trading Mamelucos. The Guarani that were enslaved were frequently worked to death. These people and their Jesuits are called the martyrs of the Reducciones. These Guarani Indios fought defensive wars with thousands of well-equipped soldiers and cavalry. The battle at the end of the film evokes the 8-day battle known as the Battle of Imbe Morori in 1641, a battle fought on land as well as in boats on rivers, in which the Jesuit-led and organized Guarani fought the Paulistas and defeated them in a decisive battle. If you do see the film, you'll notice that the Guarani are depicted as living in straw huts. The actual Jesuit missions, the Reducciones, were nothing like that. They were composed of magnificent Spanish colonial architecture, centering around a church or cathedral. What remains of these Reducciones, and they're not occupied today, they're in ruins, are United Nations World Heritage Site, and were depicted in a New York Times travel section in glorious pictures. It's interesting that the main character, Father Gabriel, who is played by Jeremy Irons, is loosely based on the life of a Paraguayan saint. In real life, he was the Jesuit, Roque González de Santa Cruz.
You're probably aware that the Jesuits have been called the Soldiers of Christ. They're a noble order. They were founded by a noble soldier. Will Durant, in his magisterial 10-volume History of Civilization series, calls the founder of the Jesuits one of the most influential men in history.
His name is Don Inigo de Onés de Loyola.
Durant went on to describe Loyola and Jesuits in general
as characterized by learning, loyalty, discretion, resourcefulness, and eloquence. You might add heroic, courageous, adventurous, brilliant astronomers, anthropologists of the first rank. The Jesuits were the greatest educators of their times. They were noted for their good manners. One of Loyola's maxims was, "More prudence and less piety is better than more piety and less prudence." Of course, the Jesuits took vows of obedience, chastity, poverty. So when they were ceded control and ownership of this vast area of South America, they established what the King of Spain could only dream of doing, a community that attracted the Indians.
They were not gathered together by force. They were gathered together by the attractions of the Catholic faith and the attractions of an earthly security and safety and prosperity that resulted from a voluntary moral order that arose in a Catholic community. I can tell you something about their prosperity by citing a few details. They built roads which led spokewise from the hub in Candelaria to all parts of the mission territory. They had 80 postal centers, complete with messengers, guards, and constantly maintained horses. Large fleets of canoes and riverboats that carried goods to points where they could be sold. They combined spirituality, artistry, and practicality, combining heaven and earth. Listen to this combination of sacred music and list of earthly accomplishments. We can only speculate on what kind of music they imported from Europe. They were great makers of violins and bows and had orchestras. I like to think they might have performed the sacred music by Mozart. He was their contemporary. At one point, the Mission Territory was exporting 30,000 green hides, 6,000 curd ones, as well as 8,500 pounds of horsehair, 75,000 pounds of tobacco, 200,000 pounds of yerba mate, they made tea out of that, and wood valued at $25,000 per year. This was in the mid-1700s. Do you know how many head of cattle they had? 719,761 head of cattle in 1767. But there's more. 44,183 oxen, 24,204 horses, 138,827 sheep. Within 2 years after the Jesuits had been expelled, all of this wealth disappeared. Of course, it's a tribute to the world's first completely literate society that they had such fine accountants who could keep track of all this. If there was ever a vanished Camelot, a land of happiness and peace, it was the Rediciones. By all evidence, the Guarani Indians were not only practical but great artists. They became fine musicians. And these people, who had never sung before the arrival of the Jesuits, were taught to play instruments and were taught to sing. In their Camelot, they were given a voice. I'll be back in a few moments.
You are listening to Redbox Media. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation at 573-4-BREAD-4 or connect with us at redboxmedia.com and social media. Come care to share with us. Redbox Media.
I'm welcoming you back in after the break with a little bit more of Ennio Morricone's score for the movie The Mission.
So let's set the record straight. Because of the excellence of the Jesuits and the excellence of the Guarani Indians, the Rediciones became very wealthy. It is said the Jesuits became wealthy, but that's a myth. Let's set the record straight about that.
The Jesuits themselves did not become wealthy. They lived in poverty, as they had vowed to. In the midst of relatively great affluence, and they had the discipline to live a simple life. The reductions were almost always established at locations at high altitudes where the air was healthy. The general plan was similar to that of the Spanish pueblos. There was a large town square, big as many football fields, all streets running in straight lines, the main streets frequently being paved. Where the church was situated, generally shaded by trees and ornamented with a large cross, a statue of the Virgin, and usually there was a village well. Adjoining the church at the head of Palanta was the residence of the fathers, called the college. To one side stood the cemetery, enclosed by a wall with a pillared hall. The dwellings of the Indians, until the end of the 17th century, were frequently plain huts, later solid one-story houses, built of stone or adobe, invariably covered with tiles because of the danger of fire, about 15 by 18 feet in size, and divided into various apartments by partitions of wickerwork. These were very comfortable quarters for families of 4 to 6 members, and were certainly incomparably better than the dwellings of the Indians of the usual Spanish encomendia. A portico resting on stone or wooden pillars and extending the entire width of the building projected from the front of each house so that one could walk through the entire town in rainy weather without getting wet. The houses were arranged in separate groups of 6 to 10 each to diminish the danger of fire. The college was separated from the plaza by a wall in the small courtyard and by another wall from the adjoining buildings. They contained the schools, workshops, storehouses. Behind it all lay a carefully kept garden of the Jesuits. Now, the churches were something rather special, comparing favorably with the churches in the towns in Spain. They were mostly three-aisled, built of massive blocks of stone, with a richly decorated facade, a main door, and several wide entrances. They conveyed an impression of grandeur, and do even as ruins today. In the massive belfries, which mostly stood apart from the churches, there were six or even more bells, which were cast in the reductions. The rich interior furnishings would have graced any cathedral. Besides the church, each village had one or more chapels for the dead, where wakes were held. There was also a churchyard chapel. The cemetery, laid out alongside the church, was, with its rows of orange trees and its wealth of flowers, truly a sacred garden of the dead. To the left of the cemetery, isolated and surrounded by a wall, stood the big house, which served as a home for widows. In effect, it was a charitable home for women. It was a charitable home for cripples, as well as a common spinning room. Beyond the village, just at the village limits, stood the chapel of San Isidore, the Ramada, or lodging house for traveling Spaniards. And farther off, the tile kilns, mills, stamping mills, tanneries, and other buildings devoted to industry. The villages mostly lay open. The reductions were protected by moats, palisades, walls, or thorn hedges, so that traffic could flow between the various villages. Serviceable roads were laid out, often to great distances. Besides, the splendid network of rivers served as an excellent waterway, the mission operating no less than 2,000 boats of various kinds on the Paraná River alone, and about that many on the Uruguay River. The land and all that stood upon it was the property of the community. The land was distributed proportionately among the leaders, who allotted it to the families under them. Instruments of agriculture, and even cattle, were loaned from the common supply. No one was permitted to sell his plot of land or to sell his house. The individual efforts of each Indian, owing to their rather slow disposition, soon proved to be inadequate, whereupon separate plots were set aside as common fields, called God's property, which were cultivated by common labor under the guidance of the padres. The products of these fields were placed in a common storehouse and were used partly for a reserve supply for unforeseen contingencies, and also as a medium of exchange for European goods and for taxes. The yield of the fields, private and public, became the absolute property of the Indians and was credited to them individually in the common barter transactions, so that each received in exchange the goods he desired. The farm plots which were held by individuals gave a smaller yield, and they were exchanged from time to time. The herds of livestock were also common property. So did the Jesuits become wealthy? Let's examine the actual records. A man named Southey, who was a Protestant, published as a result of his investigation covering the question that nothing can be more certain than that the Jesuits have not amassed any treasures in Paraguay. The myth concerning their vast transactions must be classed with that of the gold mines in the reductions, which never existed. Notwithstanding the fact that hatred and envy have so persistently clung to this assertion, the Catholic Encyclopedia straightens out another myth, that there were gold mines with slave laborers in the reductions. According to the Catholic Encyclopedia, these never existed. It's another myth. This slander became so persistent that the government was forced more than once to institute investigations. The inquiries again and again led to a clear demonstration of the untruth of the accusations and to the severe punishment of the accusers. The gold mines have never been found, even after the expulsion of the Jesuits. The estimates that have been made of the alleged vast income and trade profits are founded upon purely arbitrary or false suppositions. The vast herds of cattle, for example, were not representative of wealth because of the great numbers of ownerless cattle in which the land abounded, the price of a healthy steer in consequence being only a half a peso. To give some comparison, The carved high altar in the church at San Borja was valued at the price of 30,000 steers. It should be borne in mind that there was a great expense in keeping up such a vast community. Products had high prices and had to be imported, like iron goods, and an annual tribute had to be paid to the crown. The purely imaginary wealth of the Jesuit was proved by the scant inventories taken of their houses and colleges at the time of their expulsion in 1787. The buildings were seized suddenly, without any warning, so nothing was concealed. No treasures were found. The Jesuit, writes one scholar, strange as it may appear, did not conduct the missions after the fashion of a business concern, but rather as the rulers of some utopia. Those foolish beings think happiness is preferable to wealth. One very remarkable thing about the reductions is the exceptional talent of the Guaranis in the trades and crafts that developed in the people. Some of them were expert carpenters, joiners, woodturners, blacksmiths, goldsmiths, armorers, bell founders, masons, sculptors, stone cutters, tile makers, house painters. There were even shoemakers, tailors, bookbinders, weavers, dyers, bakers, butchers, tanners. It's a remarkable fact that the first printing press and the first movable type in all the Americas was in the reductions. They published books. Each inhabitant remained true to the craft once he adopted it and provided for the transmission of his trade to apprentices. The wonderful quality of the products of the workshops can still be seen in the beautiful cut stone work of the churches. Principally, the books that they published were of a liturgical and ascetic nature. A lot of the credit for some of the technological wonders that emerged from the reductions has to go to some of the later Jesuits who emigrated from Germany and the Netherlands. For instance, there was a brother Klausner from Munich who introduced the first tin foundry. Indians from the reductions, under the direction of these new missionaries, built the fortifications and ramparts of Buenos Aires. It's delightful to envision the workday in one of these reducciones. Throughout a normal workday in reducciones, there was singing throughout all the day, which is interesting because the early explorers who encountered the Guarani Indians reported that they had no music, they did no singing. Well, now they did. With the advent of the Jesuits, they sang throughout the day, throughout all their works. The children sang in choirs and harmonized parts in the college. The normal workday started out with the children singing hymns. Then there was mass and breakfast for everyone. Then there was a procession into the fields, singing along the way with instruments playing, often bearing a crucifix in the air or a shrine of Our Lady. And workers dropped off as they passed the fields, and the group became smaller and smaller, and the singers fewer and fewer. And at the end of the day, they repeated the process, collecting the workers field by field and returning to the town or to the workshops. At noon, everyone stopped and prayed the Angelus, and the bell rang in the tower of the Reducciones Church. Then there was the big meal of the day and the siesta, as is so common today in Latin America. Around 6 p.m., the people gathered together for a little more work. In total, it was a six-hour workday. As a comparison, in Europe at the time, the workday for the average peasant was 12 to 14 hours. This was half of that. So there was a lot of family time. There was time for family rosaries and sleep. And of course, they had Sunday off. Yet they were very, very prosperous and advanced technologically.
From all reports, it seems that they were as happy Catholics as I am. I feel a bit tired myself now. Think I'll say a prayer and go to sleep myself. Why don't you do the same? This is Chuck Coughlin, setting the record straight. Good night.
You are listening to Breadbox Media. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation at 573-4-BREAD-4 or connect with us at breadboxmedia.com and social media. Come care to share with us. Breadbox Media.